Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. Today, I'm very happy to welcome our special guest, Wendy Lemke. Hello, Wendy.
Hi, Ron.
It is so nice
sure
to catch
supposed
up
to be
with
saying,
you.
Ron or Dr. Ron. I know you as both.
Whatever you're comfortable with. let me tell the listening audience a little bit about you. So, Wendy is a licensed consulting and clinical psychologist with over 30 years of clinical experience. She is a sought-after presenter for her engaging style and expertise in the fields of clinical hypnosis, ego state therapy, and trauma-related disorders. She has consulted all over the globe and enjoys sharing her passion for clinical hypnosis and helping others become certified. Now, Wendy is the co-founder of the Ego State Therapy North American, the North American representative to Ego State Therapy International, and she's the editor of the Ego State Therapy International newsletter. She's also the fellow and a frequent instructor and an active member of the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Association. She's a fellow of the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, a certified approved consultant, and a former vice president of ASH, where we served together on the board a number of times. She's also an active member of the Minnesota Society of Clinical Hypnosis and has served on the board in various committees for both hypnosis organizations, as well as teaching basic, intermediate, and advanced workshops at regional and annual conferences. She's published articles in the Journal of Trauma and Association and the American Journal of Clinical Hypnosis, including, you recently wrote chapters for books, including one that was published in Germany. She's also produced a documentary, You're Not Crazy and You're Not Alone, Inside the Inner World of Dissociative Identity Disorder, and she's also done self-hypnosis recordings for sleep and relaxation. Wow, Wendy, you've done a lot.
I guess so. That makes me sound old.
Well, you've got at least another 30 years to go. Life is long these days.
Oh, my goodness.
So a lot of listeners to this show are from my patients who are adolescents and young adults, and I always like asking our guests to tell us how they got into the career field they're in as a guide to people who are thinking, what career do I want? So how did you get involved in psychology?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story. Sometimes, you know, you feel like a field chooses you rather than the other way around, and I kind of sometimes feel like my field has been that. I didn't really set out to be a psychologist or an expert in the field of dissociative disorders and trauma, but I started briefly as a computer programmer, which is hilarious for people who know how technology impaired I am now. And I didn't last long in that field. And then my next major was criminal justice. And I really was fascinated by the criminal mind and what, you know, contributed to the way how people thought and the way they would act. And then that led me to psychology. So I ended up really loving the field of psychology and then just went immediately on to get my master's and become a psychologist. Back then in the state of Minnesota, one out of four states where you could become a psychologist with a master's degree. And then so they've grandfathered us old people that were under that umbrella in. And so that's kind of how I started in the field of psychology. Early in my years of practice, I did a lot of volunteer work for the Central Minnesota Sexual Assault Center. And consequently, that led to a number of referrals and a caseload that was working with a lot of adult survivors of abuse, severe neglect, sexual assault, which led me to discovering my first, back then it was multiple personality disorder, which we thought was a rare thing at the time, and now we know dissociation is a very common defense utilized during a traumatic event, and that dissociative identity disorder is much more common than we used to think. So that's kind of how that started. My field into hypnosis, you know, our joint passion in the field of clinical hypnosis started with a hypnosis class in graduate school, and I could see the potential of utilizing clinical hypnosis in clinical ways with so many issues that I started right away going to the trainings we had offered here in the state of Minnesota, which, as you know, back then it was Dave Bork and Dr. Cohen and very much leaders in the field of developing the educational curriculum for the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. So that's how that started. And then early on, we invited the Watkins to Minnesota, and they are the co-founders of Ego State Therapy. And I started I was so impressed because I had just started to discover in my practice how people compartmentalized and had different states of self and even used language like a part of me wants to do this and a part of me wants to do that. And I was getting training on how to work with dissociative identity disorder, and I realized that training improved my work with other individuals who had less complicated diagnoses. So when I saw the Watkins, I'm like, wow, they developed a theory and therapy already. they know this already. They have a structured approach based on theories and information that's been around a long time. So then I started taking all the classes I could on ego state therapy, and that brings us to today, I guess. That's a long-winded answer, huh?
That's a great answer, and it shows, I've been struck as I've talked to many professionals, how the early part of the career is really winding, and things happen by chance, seemingly, to lead people to where they're going. So
I'll just add one more thing, because I really have this woman, and now all my clients, consultees, and therapists that teach around the globe have this woman to thank. I really believe we learn the most from our clients, and she was in a group that I was facilitating of women who had went through, survived sexual abuse, and we were on a week where we were talking about honoring what we did to survive. And she just shared, she hadn't shared this with anybody else, but she felt comfortable and trusted the women in the group, and she shared how she had different states of self and different, and I thought she was multiple personality. Turns out she was probably what we call OSDD now, otherwise specified, didn't quite meet the full criteria at that time because she had done so much work. But she wanted to work with me individually, and I was nervous because I didn't feel like I had the training. I hadn't learned anything about it in graduate school. And, she was one of the people that taught me, I feel comfortable with you. The relationship is the most important thing. And I said I was willing to get consultation and further training. And she really taught me so much. So she was the beginning of my career in the field of dissociative disorders.
Interesting. I think you've heard my story. I got involved in hypnosis because of one patient who said they wanted to work with me, even though I knew nothing about it. So it's I think yeah. these people as guides that are put in our path.
Right? I believe
so I'm wondering,
as well.
I didn't know about your interest in the criminal mind way back when. Can you teach us a little bit about it? What did you learn? Like, when people do antisocial things, do they think of them as antisocial, or do they, in their mind, think this is a proper thing?
Yeah, and I don't know if you know this, Ron, but, you know, John Watkins, the co-founder of Ego State Therapy, was a forensic expert that worked on the Hillside Strangler case. Were you aware of that?
No, I was not.
Yeah, so it was a very controversial time in the field of back then it was multiple personality disorder. And that was an interest of mine, too, in terms of looking at the criminal mind. And, you know, we know that there's a lot of complex trauma and violence and a lot of sometimes dissociative identity disorder is at play, but I really want to reiterate that, you know, there are many incredibly empathic, wonderful, successful people with dissociative identity disorder that are not criminal or don't engage in criminal behavior. And then we have a lot of folks, and I think more men with severe trauma and neglect end up in the criminal justice system and more women in the mental health field. And, you know, in part possibly because of the way we're socialized that women take their anger out on themselves and men develop maybe parts that take their anger outwardly. So I think, you know, states of self has a role to play. I also saw, and you can't quote me on it because I remember reading, but I don't remember the reference, somewhere that it's not that people that are antisocial don't have the capacity for empathy, but that they can turn it on and off, you know, and some of them keep it turned off, you know, for a large amount of their lives, but some of them have the capacity to, you know, for it to turn back on. And to me, that sounds like different states of self. So, you know, so I don't think it's not my huge area. I never worked in the field, you know, other than I've worked with people who have engaged in criminal activity, you know, as part of healing from complex trauma. And, you know, a lot of times there's an adaptive defense that, you know, like it's better to be the aggressor than a victim, or that a part develops a thinking or an adaptive reason for certain behavior that makes sense to them. For what their experiences were, but might be quite destructive or criminal, you know.
I'm
certainly not an expert.
Are you suggesting that a lot of criminals have a dissociative identity disorder, that they dissociate and that's when they commit crimes? Is that just a minority of them?
Well, you know, I don't know about that. You know, there's a... I think that's certainly true that we know that they have a lot of violence and trauma in their background. You know, whether that led to just antisocial or ended to some degree of dissociation. If you think about it, and you know, when people dissociate memories of trauma, but people also disconnect from the behavior that they do. I don't know how you can do some of the criminal acts that people do without disconnecting from yourself in order to do them. You know, so, you know, there's a whole array of dissociative disorders besides dissociative identity disorder. I do have colleagues that work in the prison systems, and there's certainly a high degree of, I don't know the significant prevalence rates, but I'm certain that there's a higher degree of dissociative disorders in that population than the general public. But that I really want to stress that doesn't mean, you know, certainly a lot of people develop complex trauma and develop dissociative disorders, and they're not, you know, serial killers or even violent towards others.
I have a lot of questions for you about dissociative identity. So my first question is it always a pathologic when you developed dissociative identity?
So that's a good question. I saw years ago at a conference a student had prepared a poster and said, why can't it just be a dissociative identity and not a dissociative identity disorder? And I think, we all dissociate, right? And we even teach dissociation to deal with chronic pain with clinical hypnosis. It only becomes a disorder when it creates dysfunction, when it distress and creates problems, symptoms. The continuity of memory is a huge one for dissociative identity disorder, but also, alternating abilities and identity confusion. But keep in mind, we all have different states of self. So, and I believe in the multiplicity of the self, and I think that's documented through what we know about the brain and state-dependent memory. So what differentiates someone with maybe the typical multiplicity and dissociative identity disorder would be our history, right? People with DID have a history of repetitive trauma in childhood. So they develop different types of states. They may have traumatized states, and they may have been walled off. The boundaries between those states is different from typical multiplicity. The Watkins are the ones that kind of develop that continuum of differentiation, dissociation, and talked about the boundaries between states of self, so that people with DID have had very rigid walls. Don Watkins described it like back when the Berlin Wall was up. You didn't know what was happening on the other side of the wall. There were parts that existed on both sides of the wall. But so there's that contributes to the significant memory impairment we see with DID. And then typical multiplicity we see with all of us, we have a continuity of memory. So when I'm talking with you now and my professional self, even though I'm dominant in that state of self, as we discuss these things, I'm aware that I have a parental state or another state of self, and I have a memory that's continuous for when I'm in touch with those, behaviors and memories. I don't know if I explained that or articulated that in a way that makes sense.
No, I follow. There's a couple of thoughts that come. One is that I teach routinely in my hypnosis practice how to access the subconscious. And when patients are really good at dissociating clinically, they will have memory gaps based on, like if I'll talk to their subconscious,
sure,
they won't recall it. But that's not a disorder. And I think what you're telling me is the same as other psychiatric diagnosis, like anxiety disorder, is that they're from anxiety. Anxiety by itself, if it doesn't interfere with your life, it's not a disorder, and yet it's there. And I'm thinking about it is that dissociation is there, as you said, but it doesn't have to be pathologic necessarily.
Absolutely. And certainly we know memory impairment isn't just a hallmark symptom of dissociative identity disorder, right? We can have memory impairment with anybody that's absorbed and focused or in a trance might not be taking in information, or we can have memories that are not in our conscious awareness. So, people with ADHD have problems with memory, people with anxiety, as we age. As we age, we have problems with memory. So, that's just one significant thing that differentiates folks with DID. There's many other indications.
And so if you have a patient with dissociative identity disorder, how do you approach them? Is it like a general approach, or is it individualized to each patient?
That's a good question, I think we're starting to really, I just got back from the European Society of Trauma Dissociation Conference, and I think a big theme was the differential diagnosis, because, with social media and the internet, we're seeing more and more information get out there. So folks are confused. They can pick up this and this and, oh my gosh, this might be me. So I think we're going to have to get really more specific as folks come in with us. I can't remember who it was that said this, and I thought this was at the conference. It was a beautiful way of saying it. You know, years ago, folks would come to us, young people, and be really confused about their symptoms, and we would help, you know, figure that out and do differential diagnosis. And now folks are coming in with information and things they believe they have, and the therapists are confused. We're having to figure out how to approach this because some of them are really attached to the diagnosis they've learned from, you know, other sources. So I think it may be a challenge that we'll have to continue to talk about.
Interesting. Well, I have a lot more questions about the social identity disorder. Thank you for what you're teaching us. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens, harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Unbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. Our special guest, Wendy Lemke, an expert in dissociative identity disorder and ego state therapy. And before the break, I was asking you, how do you approach somebody comes in, they have this social identity, you've made a diagnosis, how do you approach them? How do you help them?
So when I have someone coming in, whether they're coming in with a previous known diagnosis, which happens more today than it did years ago. Years ago, people weren't aware that CID was even a thing. So I talk about normal multiplicity that I see within us all and how we all have different states of self. And I really want to listen to my client, and it might be something we don't figure out in the first session. Quite often it's not. Because I use the ego state theoretical approach, I'll say I'm going to work with you the same either way. I might offer one of the diagnostic assessment tools. I may utilize one of those dissociation screening tools like the DES. It just helps give an idea of how often someone might be dissociating and provides me information that I can inquire more about in an interview. But as we work towards treatment, if it looks like they're dissociating often, we really want to teach them how to stay present. We want to work towards more resolving some of the internal conflict they may be experiencing within themselves. We want to work towards managing emotional regulation and the reactivity maybe that comes from when a trauma is triggered or stress increases. So there's a number of things. I like to sum it up with a 4C approach, like working towards developing a cooperative, collaborative system of self where, you can navigate things that might remind you of traumatic memories and where you have a continuity of memory and more balance and peace within your whole self.
Do you work on integrating parts or you let them be? Depends on the kind.
From an ego state theoretical perspective, we believe we all have different states of self. And I like to use the metaphor of a puzzle, that each piece is important, and you're not going to integrate pieces of the piece so it disappears, because it's much more about connecting the pieces rather than integrating them. So I might say we integrate strengths and resources for improving functioning, but it's really about connecting the pieces. And if you think about a puzzle, if you connect all the pieces and you're missing one, it doesn't make the whole picture. But we can also work on connecting from the inside out or the outside in. And just because, when you put together a big puzzle, some of the pieces in the middle aren't connected to the outside border, but they're connected to other pieces that are connected to the inside. So it's really, we need all the parts working together, and we need the neural networks or the clusters of information that different states of self hold to be connected. You've probably heard that with trauma, skills or affect regulation skills are really important. But if you're not connected to those skills when you need them, that's not helpful. So we want to connect people to the resources.
I love the puzzle metaphor. Do you work both in the present, and do you ever do like past life regression, or not past life, sorry, just regression within this life? But do you do like regressive work and do around the trauma, or not typically?
So we when we work on a trauma, especially with complex trauma, and I do want to say, certainly with dissociative identity disorder, usually it's trauma before the age of 10, right? Repetitive, and quite often abuse and severe neglect. But sometimes repetitive medical procedures can result in a dissociated state, early in childhood. So we don't want to make assumptions that it's all abuse and neglect, although most cases in the literature come from severe abuse and neglect. So back to your, what was your question, Ron?
So would you ever you could do age regression with a patient and go back to the time of the trauma and sort of process it. Do you do that as part of your work or not usually?
Well, we have many different ways of accessing different states of self. So it would be, what is the purpose, right? if we're going to go back in time and get in touch with a traumatized state, we want to make sure we're doing that in a safe and manageable way. Because the dissociative barriers, the wisdom, I have a phrase called the wisdom of walls. And those walls carry a lot of wisdom. And so sometimes we have to be very careful about how we let down the walls. Or we can let down them too much and then the client gets destabilized because they can't manage the information from a regression or from to a different state of self or a different time. So if we're going to do that, we want to do that in a very safe and manageable way and with a specific purpose that is okay with the whole self.
And the reason I'm asking...
Oh, yes.
The reason I've been asking is I have children. I work mostly with children and adolescents, and sometimes they've had traumatic events. In my work, it's more medically related. But revisiting that time and calming that self oftentimes is associated with a great improvement in the patient. I don't deal with the complex patients. I'm just wondering if you do that with the complex patients.
Right. So that might look like, you know, can we get in touch with the state of self? And if we're regressing, we want to set it up in a safe and manageable way. Like maybe, you know, get in touch with it and see how it goes. If there's significant distress, then we want to back off a little bit. And we just have to really do it in a careful way. But certainly it's beneficial at times. And sometimes if we can, you know, I use the metaphor of sitting on the same bench. Is there a part that knows how to regulate emotion that's willing to sit on the same bench? And that bench can be as, you know, long as it needs to be in order to do this in a safe and manageable way. If two parts can't sit too close together, they can sit, you know, at a distance, you know, in the mind. There's certainly benefit to doing that at the right time in treatment.
Yeah, as I think about it, when I do that, I've already taught them hypnosis. I've already interacted with their subconscious, that construct that we do, and then I tell the subconscious to guide them through it. So and the subconscious teaches the skills they know, so they come back equipped. They go back equipped to that time as opposed to just experiencing it.
Right, and Ron, certainly this can be much easier done. And, I mean, we always want to have the safeguards, but if you're working with people with complex trauma who don't have a dissociative disorder, they may not have as much internal conflict as somebody with DID. Because when you work with DID, you have to really make sure the whole system is on board, because there might be parts not consciously known to the self or the therapist that have a vested interest in keeping things separate and further away. And it's kind of like it's a systems approach. If we do one thing to the, you know, to the computer operating system, that may affect other things, you know. So we have to make sure it's safe and manageable to do so.
Very, very interesting. Well, when we come back, I want to learn a lot more from you about the multiplicity of self. You mentioned that a few times. I'd like to learn more. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. A special guest, Wendy Lemke, is teaching us about the social identity disorder, the criminal mind, and now you mentioned the multiplicity of self. What does that mean exactly?
Well, you know, the way I look at it is we all have different states of self. And I think the research, I guess even Disney knows, if you look at like Inside Out 2 and the movies and things that are coming out, you know, certainly people know we have a conscious mind and an unconscious mind, right? So we can't always be conscious, aware of everything. And I look at the multiple states of self that we have within us. And I think, you know, think about state-dependent memory. You know, like if I'm a professional and I'm seeing clients and I'm in that context and I have easy access to that neural network of information when I'm working. Now, if I go on vacation and I'm running into somebody, I might be like, where do I know them from if it's been a while since I've seen them? Are they from, you know, my church? Are they from, you know, parents of friends of my kids? Or, you know, so we have these different neural networks of information in the brain. And state-dependent memory shows us this. You know, if we're in one context, we can remember things better in that context. And so it's similar to that, you know, and there's different therapeutic strategies utilizing our states of self for optimal functioning, not just with trauma and dissociative disorders, but, you know, with professional enhancement, you know, sports, you know, getting into the athletic self. I've used it to develop my speaking skills, right? I didn't used to have a speaker identity. I would have thought you would, you know, someone was crazy if they told me I'd be speaking around the world, you know? So, I don't know. That's maybe kind of it in a nutshell.
I see. So I should have helped you develop a presidential self, and then you could have been president of ASH. I get it. But inside joke, people. So,
yeah.
So is it one self, or are we different selves? How does that work?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't know that I have a good answer for that. I've looked at all the many different definitions of self, and I sometimes say I think we're the sum of all our parts, you know, that, you know, in my experience, we even, our physiology even changes with different states of self. And we really see this with people with dissociative identity disorder who have the ability to wall off other states in such a way that sometimes we have to work with other states of self to change physical symptoms. You know, if there's psychological basis to those physical symptoms. So, you know, I know in the, I do a seminar on sleep and what state do you need to be in to sleep, you know, and what states interfere with sleep. My professional state certainly doesn't need much sleep. And if I can't shut that neural network down, set it aside until morning, it's going to be problematic. So, I think we can utilize the space of self and the sum of who we are to be our ultimately presenting self, our optimal functioning self. But I think the self is a multiplicity. It's not a singular thing.
So to get even more complex, what happens when you get together with somebody that you're close to? Does your sense of self change because of your interaction with another individual?
I think certainly when we look at all the different ways we access different states of self, like if I want to access the teacher in somebody, I start talking about their teacher in their classroom and their favorite student and what happened. If you are looking at relationships, I have seen people, certainly, let's not take a partner, but look at a mother-daughter. Even when that, I'll have adults that go home and visit their mom and they still feel like a kid, So we can get, different states of self can get automatically accessed. They can get accessed by different contexts, environment, different age, if we do age regression, or an event, a traumatic event or something that reminds us of a traumatic event can access the neural network and the state of self that holds the trauma. So I think people certainly have the ability to access different states of self. I know couples that both regress into 10-year-olds and fight like 10-year-olds instead of adults.
Yes, but what you're describing happens within each person individually. I guess what I'm wondering is whether when two people who are close to each other get together, if they create a unique, quote-unquote, self, I guess it wouldn't be a self, it would be a together item that's different than would occur if you were alone. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, well... I'm not sure. I understand it. I think there's the energy that we have within ourselves, and then how that energy interacts with others, right? And we have many different ways of doing that, So I think it's a really complex scenario that I'm not sure I have the answer for.
Yeah. And how does the multiplicity of self overlap with ego state therapy? Are the ego states different aspects of ourselves, or is that make two
different things? So ego state therapy is really, and I think we're moving more to the self state therapy. Self states and ego states, parts of self. There's many different parts approaches. So the language may change, but I think we're all talking about working with parts of self. And ego state therapy is really a therapeutic, it's really more of a theoretical model of conceptualizing the self and the multiplicity of self. And then, the art of being hypnotic, it's the language we use that addresses not only the states of self that are conscious to us, but maybe states that might not be in our conscious awareness at any given moment in time. So it's a great approach to work with the internal conflicts to enhance functioning in a wide range of clinical issues. But it's really especially, and I believe, necessary for working with trauma, and complex trauma, because those folks have states that are at war within themselves. And have usually states of self that are much, much more conflicted.
Is the thought with ego state therapy that the ego states exist before they're suggested? In other words, you suggested the ego state, the patient may report it, but does it exist independently of the therapy, do you think?
Well, so the Watkins believe ego states develop out of some out of normal differentiation. Like, you go to psychologists, or you go get training to become a psychologist, you take courses and classes and experience, and you develop a psychologist or professional ego state. Some ego states develop through trauma. to hold traumatic memories, or some ego states develop through the introjection of others that were around. You know, the developmental psychologist Vygotsky would say, we develop our voices, our private speech, from our caregivers. Well, that's great if you had good caregivers, because then you develop good internal speech that helps you regulate your emotions and functioning. But if you had a really critical, abusive parent, you develop really negative internal language and voices that might not be, they're trying to help you, but their approach doesn't feel very good, you know. So you can develop parts out of introjection or as resources, too, you know, to help you through things.
More and more complex. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our special guest, Wendy Lemke, who's taught us about dissociative identity disorder, ego state therapy, the multiplicity of self. And Wendy, you've had many years of excellent experience. And I'm wondering, in this segment, we often ask our guests what three tips they would have for our listening audience that they can incorporate into their lives to have better lives based on your experience. Wonder what you could share.
That's a great question, and I think I like to believe, as an ego state therapist, we don't have to be the therapeutic genius, because our clients really have the resources within themselves. So I would want clients to really learn how to listen to themselves. And if they have voices that don't seem that helpful, you know, certainly get therapy and somebody that works in the area that they need therapy in. But the other tip I have, and I think it's really important in this day and age, and I think, Ron, you'll agree with, when we talk about clinical hypnosis, we talk about trance and the ability to utilize trance experiences in a clinically helpful way. And one component of that is suggestibility and what we say to our clients. And so we want to make sure clients are taking in good suggestions for themselves, whether it's their therapist, whether they're getting information from books or TikTok or social media. We have to be careful because we go in and out of trance states automatically, spontaneously, and sometimes we're triggered into them. So I say be careful what you say to yourself because you're listening and you take those suggestions in. And are those suggestions helpful to you in 2024 and moving forward, or are they coming from somewhere in your past? You know, would there be more healthy suggestions you can start listening to? Because sometimes clients give themselves repetitive suggestions in a dissociated state or trance, and they become wired like fixed hypnotic suggestions. And we want to make sure they're taking suggestions that are useful to their whole self.
I think that's a really important point you're making. I think in this day and age, in election season, many people have convinced themselves that if the person they do not want to win the presidency wins, then everything will be terrible. And they keep repeating that message to themselves, and that creates the reality. And I think I want to encourage everyone, whatever election outcome, just tell yourself, things will work out. Things can get better. And I think it's really important, no matter, even if you think it's not what you wanted, things can get better, things can improve, and we can all work towards that. Because if you keep telling yourself, things are terrible, I move out of the country, whatever, that becomes the reality, and that's not a good reality.
Right, and it's where it's part of trance. We know a lot of times it's the undoing. People don't realize trance logic. When you get absorbed in TikTok, I call it the TikTok trance, or any kind of social media, you're absorbed, your focused attention, you're subject to trance logic, which means you don't critically evaluate the information the same way. So you might, you know, buy into inaccurate information. You might, you know, so I just really want people to hang on to their own critical thinking skills and be careful about what you say. There can be, and remember the power of the word and, right? Life can be hard and it can be beautiful, you know. You know, you don't like whoever got elected, and your life can still be okay, right? So I think we have to shift our focus from all the things that are going to be wrong and start looking at all the things that are right, not looking for all the things that offend us, but all the things that are beautiful and wonderful and, you know, how people come together regardless of their differences, you know. I was recently in Poland and in a bar, and everybody was singing, what's the song? Sweet Caroline. And I'm like, wow, you know, just a reminder that we all share 99.6% of our DNA. We're more alike than we are different.
Really important message, Wendy. So you also said earlier, listen to yourself. Do you have any tips? How does one listen to themselves?
Well, you know, sometimes if you're not consciously aware of, like I'll tell, clients will come in and say, oh, I want to work on my trauma and I'm going to do this. And I'll be like, you know, let's get going. And I'll be like, let's listen and just sit with this and notice what your body's saying. You know, notice what your body's saying. What are you experiencing right now? Oh, I'm getting kind of anxious. Well, maybe we should take it a little slower and make sure you can handle the anxiety that's coming up, right? Because we don't sometimes slow down and listen, and there are parts of us that are not consciously connected always to us. So we wanna listen. You know, a lot of people are scared of the voices in their head. And I say, well, let's focus on understanding a perspective rather than judging it. Right? The world would be a better place if Republicans and Democrats did that, right? You know, if we can, our perspective has to be, let's focus on understanding that not everybody thinks the same way or has had the same experiences to lead us to the same, to the belief, right?
Right.
So, but first we want to look at understanding the self. And, you know, if you're scared of something, do it in small amounts. You know, do it in a way that's safe and manageable to you, but really, really start to listen and be kind to yourself. And if you have really negative language, ask yourself, where did this language come from? where do these messages, did whoever given me these messages and experience have my best interest at heart? If not, you know, why are you still listening to that language of the past? What language would you like to listen to instead?
I love how when we talk about listening to self, you brought up anxiety. So listening to self is not just language and words, but it could be feelings. And as a physician, also your body speaks. Your body may have a pain here, or ache, pressure here. Pay attention. Listen to yourself. I think beautiful, Wendy, that you mentioned that.
Yeah.
And I think it was Lao Tzu said that difficult things always start off simple. So I think if you listen to yourself early, you can really change your future. Build ounce of prevention.
Yes, I believe so too. You know, and if something's not feeling great, you know, listen to that too. You know, what we have to learn. Not only from our successes, but from things that go wrong, right? So, but I think just, you know, in a world where everyone's so critical and harsh, I think we just really have to be kind to not only to each other, but really be kind and give yourself grace, you know, and your body grace. And then I saw this on a meme once, and it said, remember, as hard as it gets, so far your survival rate is 100%. You know, people get really wrapped up in how awful a time is right now. You know, maybe they're being bullied, or maybe they're going through a divorce, or maybe profound grief. And even if circumstances don't change, you get better at navigating those circumstances. And a lot of circumstances do change, right? So, you know, we don't want to make final decisions for things that are temporary.
Correct. So, you know, difficult times are opportunities for growth and learning. So they're not bad by themselves. Just keep moving. Keep moving forward. I love it.
Right.
Wendy, thank you so much for teaching us and sharing some of your wisdom with us. And really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Ron. It's always a delight talking to you.
Thank you. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.